So this morning I've chosen two Star Trek episodes to talk about as we continue our Wisdom of Sci-Fi series. If you missed last week, go online. It's on the website, and I kind of gave an introduction to the series and also talked about what we called the prophets of sci-fi, those individuals who had a vision for a future that was bigger than us. So this morning we're going to look, we're going to take that concept and we're going to apply it to us as individuals and as humans. So even though I called this talk The Measure of a Man, which is the title of one of the episodes I'm going to be talking about, it really could be called More Than We Think. Because we are more than we think. And that phrase is actually a reference to the fourth claim of what's called the perennial philosophy. I wanted to give you a very brief intro to that because it supports today's topic, and then it's actually going to be the foundation for our series, our Essential Spirituality series in the fall. So this is giving you a taste of what that series will be. So there's a common core of both wisdom and practice at the heart of the world's great religions, including Judaism, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Taoism, and Confucianism. And scholars call this essential common core of all the traditions perennial wisdom or the perennial philosophy. So at the heart of this philosophy are four claims, and I'm going to go through them in record speed today because you're going to get them in great detail in October. The first is that there are two realms of reality. Right? We get that, right? There's the physical realm we live in, and then there's the spiritual, or what we sometimes call the visionary realm. So we can call that realm spirit or mind or the Tao or consciousness or heaven or the force. We just recognize there are two realms. The second claim of the perennial philosophy is that as human beings, we partake of both realms, right? Now, for those of us in unity and new thought, this is kind of no duh. But well, seriously, this is like preaching to the choir, right? But for many cultures, the fact that man could directly access that second realm, that spirit realm, was revolutionary, right? So we recognize that as the second claim of the perennial philosophy, that we are not divorced from the sacred, but that we are intimately linked to the sacred. The third claim is that human beings can recognize this divine spark and partake of that sacred ground, that we can access that source, we can access that realm. In other words, that we don't have to believe this philosophy on faith, that we can have that experience ourselves. We are capable of experiencing that. And there are many ways to do that, through prayer, through meditation, through contemplation, through the study of sacred scripture. The point is, the third claim says, we can access that realm, right? And then the fourth claim, and it's the one we're going to be talking about today, is what they call their summum bonum. A summum bonum is that what is our highest goal and greatest good? So the folks who created this said that our summum bonum is realizing our spiritual nature. That we literally are born into human form, here's the paradox, so that we can fully realize our spiritual nature. Right? So in a nutshell, and this is a quote from Roger Walsh, the author of the book Essential Spirituality. He says, the words differ from one tradition to another, but their central message is the same. You are more than you think. We have underestimated ourselves and each other. The philosopher Epictetus said this almost 2,000 years ago. You are a distinct portion of the essence of God and contain, bless you, part of him, her, in yourself. Why then are you ignorant of your noble birth? Why do you not consider whence you came? Why do you not remember when you are eating who you are who eats and whom you feed? Do you not know that it is the divine you feed, the divine you exercise? You carry God about with you, and you know nothing of it. How powerful is that? You carry God about with you, and you know nothing of it. So the two episodes I want to talk about this morning directly support that fourth claim of the perennial philosophy, that we are more than we think. So the first one is called The Measure of a Man. And it's, you know, it's up there in my my top five favorite of all Star Trek episodes, right? These are both the Next Generation episodes, by the way, that I'm talking about today. So The Measure of a Man, that episode begins when the Enterprise docks at a star base, and a man who has been a man who has been studying Data, the android on the Next Generation, and has gotten to the point where he believes he can recreate Data, right? So basically his request is initially that he wants to work with Data in order to recreate Data, this amazing android. But what they quickly realize is that what he really wants to do is take Data apart, right? Because he's a machine, right? And so Data asks him very reasonably, essentially, do you know how to put me back together? Very reasonable question in that situation, wouldn't you think? And Commander Maddox has to admit that he's really not as clear about how to put him back together as he is about how to take him apart. And so at that point, Data says, you know, then I'd really wish that you wouldn't take me apart. And that's where it gets interesting, because Commander Maddox's premise is that Data is a machine and therefore has no rights. Even though he's gone to Starfleet Academy and he's treated and is a valuable member of the crew, Maddox has decided that he has no rights, that he is in fact the property of Starfleet, and therefore they can do whatever they wish to him. Now, understandably, the members of the Enterprise crew don't see it that way. And so it goes to court, and this is where it gets even more interesting. The JAG, the Judge Advocate General, is a woman who used to be in a relationship with Captain Picard. So there's that undercurrent running through this whole episode of the two of them kind of sparring, because what ends up happening is, because it's a new star base and they don't have a full set of advocates, members of the Enterprise have to serve as the lawyers for this trial. So in other words, Picard is chosen to defend Data, but someone in the crew had to prosecute him. One of his friends had to prosecute him. And the Judge Advocate General chose Commander Riker, who was the first officer. And at first, Riker refused. He said, I won't do it. He's my friend, and he's not just a machine. And she basically said to him, if you don't do it, I will summarily find against him, which forced Riker. And she said, and if there's even a hint that you are not prosecuting him to the full extent that you could, I will find against him. So we get into the court scenes, and obviously Riker is dismayed, but intent on doing a good job so that Data at least has a chance in this trial. So in a really poignant point in the trial, Picard has done a wonderful job presenting a case that talking about what is sentience and what is life, and that Data meets all the criteria for life, and that he's won all sorts of awards, and he's shown leadership, and he's just amazing. And Riker gets up, and he pushes a button on the back of Data's neck, and Data shuts off. And Riker said, Pinocchio is a puppet, and his strings have just been cut. So certain of his defeat, Picard does what everyone does in these situations, and he goes to 10 forward, and he talks to the bartender. Beautifully played by Whoopi Goldberg. Her name is Guinan. He goes to Guinan, and he literally has his head in his hands. I think that scene is where some of the Picard memes come from, right, where they show Patrick Stewart with his head in his hands. And he said, I'm losing this, Guinan. I don't know how to, even after this impassioned plea that Data is more than a machine, I don't know how to convince them, and I know she's going to rule against us. And what Guinan points out to him is that the issue here isn't whether or not Data is a machine. It isn't even whether or not Data has rights. It's the premise that if Maddox is allowed to treat him as a disposable machine, then he will, in a sense, be creating a race of slaves for Starfleet's use, with no rights under the law. And that's what Picard takes back. He goes and he says, our mission is to seek out new life. And he points at Data. And he says, their new life sits. Luckily, and we were hopefully seeing this coming, the JAG agreed with him and said that, yes, Data may be a machine, but he is owned by no one, and he has the right to make decisions about his own life. Now, there's some subtle subtext going through this whole episode. One of them is that Commander Maddox continues to refer to Data as it. Everyone else refers to Data as if he is a man, right? He, him, his. Throughout the entire episode, Maddox refers to Data as it, until the very end, where Data actually approaches Commander Maddox at the end of the trial that the commander just lost and says to him, when you have figured out how to get me back together, I will be happy to work with you. And I will be happy to partner with you in creating other androids who have rights under the law. And Maddox was blown away by this. Here he tried to essentially kill Data. And Data is offering to help him and to work with him. And so Maddox looks at the JAG and he said, wow, he's remarkable. And the JAG looks at him and says, you didn't call him it. So everyone in this episode has a shift in their understanding and a shift in their consciousness. So while on the surface this episode is about defining what is life, right, which in and of itself is powerful enough, but they go even further, because every person in this episode, by the end of the episode, sees that they are more than they had previously thought. Obviously, everyone now sees Data as even more than they had thought he was. And he sees himself that way. Even though he's an android and he's not supposed to have any feelings, you almost sense more confidence in him after this trial. Picard has a shift because he always follows the rules. And on this one, he didn't follow the rules. He fought it. He fought a wrong that was about to be perpetrated. The JAG, Philippa, had really been resentful. She had had a lot of hurt feelings about how her relationship with Picard had ended. And even she shifted and saw him differently and let go of her resentment. I think probably the sweetest thing that happened was with Riker. Everybody was in 10 forward, celebrating, you know, woo-hoo, Data's a real person. Right, we won. We're not going to lose Data, except for Riker, and he was off in the lounge where all the leaders get together, and he was very sad and just kind of staring out into space. And Data sought him out, and said, "What? Why are you in here? Why aren't you celebrating with us?" And Riker said, "Oh my gosh, Data, I almost got you killed. How could I possibly celebrate this? I don't deserve to be celebrating with you." And Data said, no one deserves it more. You made the ultimate sacrifice. You did something that went completely against who you are, because you were trying to save me in your prosecution of me. and he made Riker go and celebrate. So everyone in this episode saw themselves and their crewmates in a different light. They saw that they were more, greater than they thought that they were. So the next episode is called Transfigurations. And you're actually going to see a clip from this one in a couple of minutes. And I call this the Jesus episode, and you'll see why as we go through it. So this episode starts out when the crew of the Enterprise comes upon a very badly damaged small vessel on a planet. And they find this humanoid. There's three or four people in the ship, but only one is barely alive. The other ones have already died. And they find him, and they... Crusher says, I think I can save him. So they transport him up to the ship, and she starts working her magic on him. But there, even before they transport him up, there's this neat little moment that's kind of a foreshadowing of what's to come, because Geordi, who has not a lot of confidence and even less confidence with women, right? That's kind of a running gag on the series. He's reaching over this nearly dead alien to check to make sure he's still alive, and he gets this little energy pulse that shoots through him, and you see him, he kind of goes, ah! And then it's gone, right? So they get back up to the ship, and Geordi had an injury previously, and plus, you know, Crusher saw the energy pulse going through him, so she wanted to check on him. So she said, you know, you're fine, go off in the corner, I'll check on you later. Meanwhile, I have to take care of the nearly dead guy. This is me paraphrasing. So she gets him stabilized, and he is truly near death. I mean, they work, as you see in the episode, literally for weeks trying to cure this man. But what's interesting is that she finally gets around to Geordi, because he's like, Doc, can I please go? You know, let me go. And she's like, well, no, I have to check you. And he said, honestly, I have never felt better. So again, that foreshadowing of what's to come. So... The alien, when they can finally revive him, has no memory. He's lost all his memory. So he doesn't know who he is, which we realize as the episode goes on is really a metaphor, right? He doesn't really know who he is. But as Dr. Crusher is working on him, she's amazed by how quickly he's healing. She keeps saying to Picard, first of all, he should be dead. And second of all, he should not be healing this quickly. There's something going on in him that is above and beyond the healing process. She said, it's as if his very cells are transforming. It's as if they are mutating. I've never seen anything like it. Within 48 hours, John Doe's, what she's named him, organs are starting to regenerate, blowing her away. So he continues to recover at a remarkable rate. And after a month, he's back on his feet, although still has amnesia. And curiously, he keeps experiencing these episodes of intermittent pain and this flash of golden light that accompanies the pain going through his chest and his upper body. Right? So we start to see little snippets of, again, this little foreshadowing of what's to come, and to see that he is special. Transporter Chief Miles O'Brien loves to do really dangerous things in the holodeck, and so he's constantly reporting to sick bay needing repair, right? So he shows up in sick bay, and he's dislocated his shoulder because he was kayaking down the rapids. And so Crusher starts to admonish him and says, you'll just have to stand over there for a second while I deal with someone who's more seriously hurt. And so John just... he kind of gets this funny look on his face, and he almost instinctively walks over and touches Miles' shoulder. And again, you see that little burst of energy, just like you saw with Geordi. And all of a sudden, his shoulder is fine. And John looks at him and says, don't worry, my friend, you'll be all right. And Beverly comes running over and says, what did you do? And John kind of goes, I don't know. Instinct took over, and he reached out, and he healed Miles just by touching his shoulder. So meanwhile, back on the bridge, Data and Geordi are trying to figure out through various components of the wrecked ship where he came from. And they're trying to backtrack the trajectory of the ship. And John says to me, when Picard says to John, "I think we may have found your home," it's the first time they see John become afraid. And he says, "You must not take me home. We were trying to escape from something." And then again, there's that glow and that pain that happens to him again. So, again, he doesn't know why he's afraid. He doesn't know why he can't go back home. But he's very clear that he needs to escape from his home. So as he continues to recover, they go on a field trip to 10 Forward. Do you notice a theme here? 10 Forward is where all the exposition takes place on the show, all right? So they take a field trip, and they have this exchange. So John's looking around 10 Forward, and remember we talked last week about how diverse the Star Trek universe is, right? So John's looking around 10 Forward, and he says, "This is truly remarkable." And Beverly says, "Well, what is?" And John says, your crew, they're all so different from one another, and yet they all work together so freely." And Beverly looks at him and says, "Well, does that surprise you?" Thinking maybe his memory is coming back. And he says, "You know, it's new to me." He said, "My people are different somehow. If only I could remember." And he said, "Yesterday, for one terrifying moment, there was clarity." And Beverly pursued it and said, "Was it when the pulse went through you?" And he said, "Yes. For that moment, my purpose seemed clear, and then it was gone. I am on some kind of a journey. Whatever brought me here, whatever is happening to my body, is part of that journey, and I must complete it." I loved that line. I thought, how many times have we been in prayer, or have we been in a conversation, or have we been in a meditation, and we have that flash of absolute clarity, of absolute understanding, of absolute knowing what our purpose is, and then we come back and it's gone. But it lingers on. That moment of absolute clarity. So as they travel back towards John's planet, they encounter a ship on an intercept course. And meanwhile, John keeps experiencing these energy pulses, and he's actually becoming desperate to leave the ship. The pulses are becoming so strong, and Beverly explains that his entire cell structure is transforming. They're becoming so strong that he's afraid that he'll hurt someone. So he runs to the shuttle bay and tries to actually steal a shuttlecraft to get off the ship because he's afraid of these pulses. He's afraid of what's happening to him, of the power that these pulses are revealing. And so in an interesting scene, Worf, the Klingon, tries to stop him, and he falls off of an overhang and breaks his neck and dies instantly. And so everybody's rushing over to him, and John goes over, and he touches his neck. And this time you see that golden glow run through his entire body. And Worf is not only healed, but brought back to life. And that's when they realize that there is something really going on here with this guy, as if the other pulses weren't clues enough. So by this time, the alien ship has reached the Enterprise and is demanding that they return the criminal to them. So understand, Picard at this point is like, yeah, maybe we do need to get this guy off the ship because he just killed one of my bridge crew. At which point, Crusher points out, and he also brought him back to life, right? In literally the blink of an eye. So Sunad, who it turns out is the leader of the ship that's come to get him, says to Picard, "Return him immediately. He is one of four escaped prisoners. We eliminated the other three. He is a disruptive influence. He spreads lies and encourages dissent. He disturbs the natural order of our society. But when pressed for details, Sinad refuses to elaborate. So at this point, Deanna Troi, who's an empath, says to the captain, you know, they don't just hate John, they're afraid of him for some reason. And when they press John, he was so frustrated by his lack of memory, he said, their accusations may be true. I don't believe that I'm a criminal, but if necessary, I will surrender to them, because at that point they were threatening to destroy the Enterprise. He said, but I am convinced there is more at stake here than my life. There's something important I must complete. My survival is vital. And that brings us to the clip that Dave's going to pull up for us.
Let me remind you, we are on a mission of exploration. Our purpose is to establish peaceful relations with the civilizations we encounter.
We do not want relations with you.
If that is your wish, we will respect it.
We simply want you to leave Zalconian space as soon as you return the criminal.
Commander, we will leave. It is not our policy to intervene in the affairs of other cultures. But before I return the survivor to you, I would appreciate a more detailed explanation of what he has done to merit a death sentence.
As I said, it is not your concern.
Agreed. However, there are circumstances of which you may be unaware. The survivor has suffered a memory loss. He's therefore ill-equipped to defend himself against your accusations.
There is no defense. Our judgment is final.
There's something else. Since his recovery, he's manifested unusual abilities.
What kind of abilities?
He apparently has the power to heal injuries with a simple touch.
Lies.
And even to reverse death itself.
Obviously, he has corrupted you as well. I see I'm wasting my time. Weapons.
You will no longer harm these people, Sunad.
Fire upon that ship.
Do not be afraid. I won't hurt you.
Kill him, Captain. He's evil.
You could learn from these people, Sunad. They do not fear me.
They don't know how dangerous you are. You and the others like you.
That is what you and the other leaders have maintained for generations, but it is not true. Captain, my species is on the verge of a wondrous evolutionary change, a transmutation beyond our physical being. I am the first of my kind to approach this metamorphosis. They tried to convince us it was a sickness we would never survive, that the pain and energy pulses would kill us. They claimed we were dangerous, so they destroyed anyone who exhibited the signs of the transfiguration.
We were protecting our society.
By murdering us, you saw the mutations as a threat to your authority. You were terrified of something you couldn't understand. Some suspected that what was happening to them was not evil. Four of us decided to flee Zelkon and let the metamorphosis take its course. You hunted us down, killed the others, but I survived. With the help of kind, and generous people. There is nothing to fear. You can join me. All Zalconians can. Let me show you.
Don't touch me!
As you wish. But others will listen now that you can no longer prevent me from telling them the truth. Those who are willing will follow me.
Sunad is back aboard the Zalconian vessel, Captain.
People are about to embark on a new realm, a new plane of existence, thanks to you.
It is our mission to seek out life in all forms. We are privileged to have been present at the emergence of a new species.
Beverly, you gave me life, and more. I do not have the words for my gratitude, or my sorrow at leaving you.
The Jesus episode. What do you think? So I think this episode is such an amazing allegory for the life and message of Jesus. And in fact, for anyone whose life represented massive change and true transformation, we see the fear, we see the change back behavior of the authorities whose way of life is threatened. I mean, the parallels to Jesus' life are so obvious, right? You know, Jesus's teaching, his life, just spoke to us all being divine. It spoke to us all being equal. It spoke to us all having that inner light, which was a direct affront to the authorities, to the Romans, and even the Pharisees of his day. I think it's interesting to recognize how frightening change is when what you're really invested in is maintaining the status quo, is maintaining the things that have been always. So I love both of these stories because they both invite us to fully embrace our humanity and our divinity and to be willing to look at our fear around both. Because again, in The Measure of a Man, Picard becomes very clear that the real issue isn't whether or not Data is an android or is sentient. It's in not recognizing that we're all one. The real issue in both of these episodes is in how we treat anyone who is different from us, whoever that prevailing us is. And how we can reduce them to being non-beings. It's happened repeatedly in our country. It's happened repeatedly around the world. It's happened repeatedly through the eons as we have evolved and then fallen back and then evolved and then fallen back and then evolved and then fallen back. Because our drive, as John's drive was toward evolution. And yet the fear keeps us falling back. And as humans, how easy it has become for us to destroy anyone not like us. And yet, as we see on the cover of your bulletin, diversity is critical to our very survival. It was the premise, as we talked last week, about the creation of Star Trek. Star Trek was an attempt to say that humanity will reach maturity on the wisdom on the day that it begins to not just tolerate, but to take a special delight in differences and ideas and differences in life forms. In Transfiguration, Sunad is willing to kill anyone, man, woman, child, even a ship of complete strangers, to stop the transformation, to stop the change. Remember his justification? We were protecting our society. How often do we see that today? We were just protecting our society. I saw an interesting comment on a kind of a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend on Facebook, and it was some kind of weird comment, and somebody commented on that and said, oh, this is an example of spiritual wickedness. And I thought, well, that's an oxymoron, right? Think about it. When what someone believes or who someone is becomes a threat to the established society, they'll do anything in their power to stop it. And so we can turn Sunad and those like him into villains, or we can see that they're just afraid. If we allow them to, if we allow ourselves to see them as villains, then we are doing exactly what they are doing. But when we have compassion for their fear, and we have understanding for our own fear, then we can move beyond the judgment and the demonization. Because what's interesting in the episode, and I encourage you to watch the entire episode of Transfigurations, is we also see John's fear. John is afraid of what is happening to him. He shows incredible courage, because many people, and you hear this in the episode, that have started to go through this have not allowed the transformation to continue because they are afraid of what's happening to them. They are afraid of their power. They're afraid of their wisdom. They're afraid of their light. But John shows great courage in allowing this transformation, even through the pain and through the fear, to happen. He chose to keep going, even when he was described as evil. So maybe what we really fear is not how different we are, but how similar we are. I believe at the root of many phobias, of many fears, is that we are that which we are rejecting. We're going to talk about this a little bit more in 2 weeks when we look at the Tao of Star Trek. But we have the opportunity, when we find ourselves being Sunad, to look in the mirror and say, what am I really afraid of? Where does the fear come from? Marilyn Sewell said, the stranger we fear is the stranger in ourselves that we must greet if we are to be whole. So are we willing to look in the mirror, face that which we fear, and, like John, to remember who we are? His amnesia is a metaphor for the fact that we have forgotten who we are. We have forgotten that we are points of light, as we sang, that we are demonstrations of the Christ, of the divine, however you define that divine, in the world. And that's what John was trying to tell Sunad at the end of the episode that we just saw, that transfiguration is available to everyone, that it's not to be feared, that it's to be embraced. Powerful, powerful example of Jesus being the example and not the exception. When Jesus said, you will do greater things than I have done, he wasn't kidding. And yet we have made him the exception so that we don't have to continue that path into transformation. What would Jesus do? Jesus would tell you to be you, fully and completely, and to embrace the wholeness of who you are. So are we willing to see that we are more than we think? And to feel our fear and allow that transformation to happen anyway, as John did? Are we really willing to behold the Christ in one another, as we just sang? Right? You know, it's really easy to behold the Christ in people you like. And it's even easier to behold the Christ in people who like you. Right? But that's not what we're being called to do. We're being called to behold the divine in every person we meet. Those we like, those we don't like, those that are like us, and those that are not like us. That's what creates that transfiguration within ourselves, when we are willing to truly see the face of God in everyone that we meet, including that face in the mirror. Let's take that into meditation. That golden light that we saw on the screen flowing through John's body. As you breathe in, see that same golden glow moving all the way through your body. Visualize that pulse of energy moving into every cell, moving into every organ, see it flowing through you and filling you completely. Picture yourself as that glowing being of light, that transformed being. And know that that light is who you truly are. That light is your essence. It is your glory. It is your wisdom, your love, your courage, your power. It is all of you. There was a scene in the episode where Geordi thanks John for giving him confidence. And John looks at Geordi and says, I didn't give you anything. You had it within you all along. And the same is true for us. We have everything we need inside of us. We simply need to become willing to move beyond our doubt and our fear and our worry and accept the truth of our being. To know that that face we see in the mirror is the very face of God. And the faces we see every day are also the face of God. And when we know this and we accept this and we live this, there will be no more hatred, no more fear, no more poverty, no more war. We will simply be one. One beautiful point of light. Taking another breath, this time visualize that golden glow that you are spreading throughout this room as we literally fill the room with your glory, with your light, with your being. And now in our mind's eye, we see that glow extending beyond these walls. Filling this community with the deep knowing that we are one. Taking another deep breath when you're ready, slowly and gently. Open your eyes and return.